This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
What a chance for Kopp, and Jake Allen with a big stop. Sherratt holds this in. Sherratt scores! Well, Ben Sherratt told Sarah Orlowski at the end of the second period, we have lots of time. We're only down by two. Well, Ben Sherratt's made it a one-goal game.
Ben Sherratt scoring for the Winnipeg Jets earlier this season. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Lots of Winnipeg Jets conversation to have, all about the Stanley Cup playoffs and the latest on the Edmonton Oilers general manager search. We want to hear from you. You can join in on the conversation. You can reach us here in studio. That's the best way to do it is via Twitter at Illegal Curve. We're also accepting your text messages. Send your texts to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. And as I said, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. Sort of weird.
Is it ever not good to see us? Like, you say that before at the beginning of every show.
Yeah, right now it's not that good to see you after you interrupt me.
That's what I wanted to know.
It's good to see Dave still, but no, you're quickly diminishing in terms of how good it is to see you.
There must be some shows where you're kind of like, I don't really want to see Ezra.
Ezra, that's every show.
Yeah, I was going to say, some is being charitable to yourself, but I appreciate that nonetheless.
I'm always happy to see you guys.
I know, you're a much nicer person than I am.
Yeah, that's true.
That has already been established, well established.
You're the TSN 1290 curmudgeon.
It's a role that I'm glad to play, let me tell you. Anyways. It is adequate to see you, Ezra. Yeah. It's good to see you, Dave.
Thank you, Drew.
We start, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets on this Saturday morning, and I was going to say that it is a little weird to talk about the Jets without having a game to look back on or a series to look back on, because now we are fully into off-season mode with the Winnipeg Jets. We are going to spend a lot of today's show finishing our player evaluations that we didn't quite finish up last week, as it was a busy Saturday last Saturday, so we're going to try and finish that up. But we want to start with this question for you, gentlemen. The Jets have what I'm going to term three unrestricted free agents that are sort of that have a realistic shot of returning, or a more realistic shot. I'm excluding Kevin Hayes from this equation because I don't think any of us in this room think that there's any possibility that the Jets are going to be looking to bring back Kevin Hayes. No disrespect, but the realities of the salary cap situation, the realities of his performance, he seems like a pure rental for the Jets. So I'm talking about Brandon Tanev, Ben Sherratt, and Tyler Myers. And those are the sort of the one, maybe two. I'd be hard-pressed to see all three of those guys returning. So my question for you guys is, which of those three is the priority or should be the priority for Kevin Cheveldayoff to get back under contract for next season?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll go first here, guys. And, you know, for me, it's fairly obvious. And, I should preface this by saying that, you know, what Kevin Cheveldayoff does with the UFAs and the RFAs, the second tier RFAs, I'm talking about, you know, all the players that aren't named Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor. The big one is Jacob Trouba. So I'm assuming, by answering this question, I'm assuming that Trouba is back for at least another year, or the Jets have traded for another defenseman. And why I say that, Drew, is because I'm assuming that there already is a number one pairing right shot defenseman, right? Because I think if there isn't, then I think there is more urgency to sign Tyler Myers, right? So I'm going to go under the assumption that Trouba's back next year or the Jets replace Trouba. So for me, it's got to be Ben Sherratt. And I realize that, you know, there are, you know, some people out there who think that maybe, you know, Ben Sherratt has played himself out of Winnipeg, you know, making $1.4 million a year. As far as I'm concerned, you know, making $1.4 million a year, he coming off of his, you know, best ever offensive year. I mean, one of the best bargains in the NHL. And I realize that, you know, if you look at his advanced stats, yes, when Dustin Byfuglien is out of the lineup, Ben Sherratt's advanced stats, his possession numbers, his ability to get out of the zone is definitely negatively affected when Buff is out of the lineup. Quite simply, Sherratt is better with Buff. We know that. I mean, that's his partner. That's his bread and butter. But when you're talking about Myers, Tanev, and Sherratt, I think, you know, if you're able to get Sherratt for, you know, let's say $2.5 million a year, You know, maybe that's a little bit low. Maybe he's closer to $3 million a year, Drew. I really don't know. I haven't broken down the comparables, but I think it's safe to say that Sherratt's going to make at least $2 million a year on his next contract, maybe as high as $3 million a year. And you know what? I have no problem with that. And, you know, is he better suited for a third pairing role? Maybe, but I think he's done an admirable job on the second pair. And I have to say, too, when Buff was out of the lineup, I thought that Sherratt was still kind of that solidifying presence. And we know that Sherratt's game is not an offensive game. He's more of that stay-at-home defenseman. You know, he's one of the top hits leaders on the Jets. So when you're talking about Sherratt, Myers, and Tanev, to me, it's Sherratt because I think when you're talking about Tanev, he's going to get a raise too, right? He's going to be somewhere probably around $2 to $3 million as well. And for me, the reason why I have a problem with signing Tanev to that contract, and he's also coming off a career year with, 14 goals, 29 points. But when you're talking about players like Mason Appleton, you're talking about Christian Vesalainen, I mean, these are guys that are making entry-level money, and I think they can replace Tanev's offense. So that's why I'm picking Sherratt over Tanev, and when it comes to Myers, I think he's just going to make too much money for a third-pairing guy. I mean, if he's making $4 million a year or, you know, maybe $5 million a year, and we have to keep in mind, this is probably Myers' last opportunity to get another big deal, right? I think we'd all agree with that. I don't think he's going to get a seven-year deal, but, you know, Myers could get 3, 4, 5 years from a team, and it's probably going to be for a cap hit that's going to be too high when you consider that not only do the Jets have to sign Connor and Line A, they're going to have to sign Trouba or at the very least trade Trouba for somebody who makes, you know, $5 or $6 million a year. So for me, I just think that it's Sherratt when you're talking about those three, because I have no problem if he's making $2.5 million a year or $3 million a year. I think you can fit that in.
Dave, same question.
Well, as you just answered it so succinctly, I mean, no, to me, it's a function of what kind of money you're going to have available, right? And obviously you have to factor that in. Like, as he says, depending on what happens with Jacob Trouba, whether Jacob Trouba is part of the Jets for the long term or the short term, regardless, he's going to be making some money next season. And if you're looking at what the Jets are going to have to fit in, obviously with what they've currently got under contract for next year, which is already, I think they've got about $33 million in their forwards wrapped up, and that's obviously without adding in a big increase for, you know, a guy like Andrew Cobb is probably going to get some more money. You got a guy like, you got Kyle Connor, you got Patrick Laine, so you got some serious money already allocated to your forwards. My thinking is Brandon Tanev is a guy who they like, and especially with the, you know, Cobb and Lowry, you know, duo
TLC line,
the TLC line. So to me, I think, you know, right now he's making $1.15 million, and I think that, like, as he said, he had a career year, so he's going to be, it's a UFA, he's going to be looking for a big payout. A guy like Ben Sherratt, look, if you can get, I agree, like, he's fine as a third pairing defenseman, and if you can get him for a reasonable amount of money, depending on what your plan is with the defensive depth, because that to me is the most important aspect of a team. I mean, obviously, we look at the Jets forward grouping, and we know that these guys can score goals. Tyler Myers, I mean, I agree. I think, you know, for what he's become, I think he's priced himself out of Winnipeg. So, and I suspect a lot of people aren't going to be too upset about that. But I think it's a function of looking at the depth of this organization, looking what you have in your prospect pool for guys with the Manitoba Moose to replace those guys.
Meaning the left side of the Jets' defense, which is in what I'll describe as an organizational weakness,
right,
makes re-signing Sherratt more imperative.
That's right. So to me, I agree with Ezzie. Like, again, I don't hold Ben Sherratt up as this second pairing defenseman. Like, I think Bufflin will kind of cover a lot of his bases. I think he stepped up his game last year for sure with the absence of those guys, but I still think, like, he can probably be replaced, but it's a function of who does he get replaced by. We know Sammy Niku likes to play on the right side. We know Tucker Pullman plays on the right side. You've got Dmitry Kulikov, who's a question mark based on, I mean, his salary's you know, a bit of an albatross and what he was able to do last year. So, I mean, you really don't have, aside from, you know, Josh Morrissey, you look at Nathan Beaulieu, are you going to re-sign him? So that left side, to me, is the big question mark for the Winnipeg Jets. And I think Ben Sherratt at least gives them some familiarity and some stability in that position. It's just really a function of whether you can get him signed to that contract. But, I mean, again, I think he can be replaced, but to me it's a function of who are you going to find to replace him for less money? Because that's what you have to do.
Well, you mentioned Nathan Beaulieu, and Nathan Beaulieu is a restricted free agent. And for the Jets to qualify him, they have to qualify him at 10% over what his current salary is. Mm-hmm. So he's making $2.4 million. An extra, you know, 10% there is another $240,000. Yeah. I don't think the Jets are going to qualify Nathan Beaulieu. That being said, I don't think it's impossible that they would re-sign him at a lesser dollar than what he's not worth. He's not worth $2.4 million that he's making right now. He's definitely not worth $2.6 million, which would be what the Rays would be in and around there. So I think I could see the Jets trying to re-sign Nathan Beaulieu, but doing so at a, you know, without qualifying him, technically making him an unrestricted free agent, but one with where they might offer him a contract. I think they did the same thing last year with a player. I can't remember who that player is off the top of my head. But there was a player.
Joe Morrow.
It was Joe Morrow. That's exactly right. Where they chose not to qualify Joe Morrow. Instead, they just signed him right there on the spot for the $1 million that he made this past year.
Right. And I think there's no doubt that there's going to be turnover when it comes to the Jets defense. I mean, we already talked about it. Myers is most likely not coming back. But when you talk about the left side versus the right side, I think it simply comes down to you have Tucker Poolman and Sammy Nikku just knocking at the door to play on that right side. And, you know, Sammy Nikku's a guy that we went over this. I mean, he's a left shot guy, but he's a guy that prefers to play on the right side. But you have Nikku and Poolman, and we've talked about Poolman. I mean, he arguably should have been with the Jets, but because they're stronger on the right side, that's why he was with the Manitoba Moose, and he had all the injuries and all of that. But when you're talking about, you know, if you're not going to bring back Ben Sherrod or you're not going to bring back Nathan Beaulieu, who you mentioned, and I agree, I don't know necessarily if you want to bring back Beaulieu making, you know, $2.7 million a year or whatever it's under that. Yeah, but just under that, 2.5, whatever it is, Drew, but there is going to be turnover. So Chevy is going to have to decide, first off, what are you doing with Jacob Trouba? Because that's the huge question mark. And we know there's a chance that, you know, Trouba signs a long-term deal or, you know, he goes to arbitration and he gets that one-year deal. But, you know, if Myers is gone, if Sherratt's not coming back, and, you know, Dave mentioned Andrew Kopp, and I think Andrew Kopp is a big one here, guys, because I think if you're choosing between Andrew Kopp and Brandon Tanev, I think most people are going to say that because Kopp's a little bit younger, and I think you would agree that he's a little bit more versatile. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tanev is a guy who has pretty good possession numbers. He's not a driver, though. And I realize that, you know, he set the Jets franchise record, Jets 2.0 franchise record for hits and all of that. I mean, he's a spark plug. He's a very useful player. I really like Tanev. You guys know that I like Tanev. But again, it comes back to what we just talked about. Do the numbers work? The Jets are only going to have a finite amount of money here. I mean, the cap's going to be, you know, $82, $83 million a year, whatever it is, Drew. And, you know, when you talk about Connor and Lyon Aim, and I mean, and Trouba, those are the three big guys. But, you know, if your focus is Kopp and Sherratt, well, you know, that means that, you know, Myers and Tanev are going to be squeezed out a little bit here. So I do think that Chevy will look at the free agent market. He'll probably look at the free agent market for more so, you know, depth defenseman, depth forwards. But it goes back to what we were talking about when you're talking about Tanev. I mean, Mason Appleton, guys, I think you would agree that he did enough in a short amount of time with the Jets that he can play a third or fourth line role for the Jets. And I think same thing goes for Christian Vesalainen. I mean, how long can Vesalainen be in the American Hockey League? I mean, not much longer.
I would agree. I mean, it does seem like that sort of the Vesalainens and the Appletons are probably waiting for their opportunity to come up and get a full-time role. I mean, Appleton almost had a full-time role with the Jets.
36 games.
Yeah, you know, for a significant period of time. Jack Roslovic is obviously looking for more consistent opportunity on this Jets team going forward. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, certainly foresees himself as a top six player who didn't really get that opportunity on a consistent basis. There's a role for these players to play that you're not sure that these sort of the depth guys can continue to fill, especially with, you know, the salary cap ramifications that the Jets are going to have to face.
And that's the key, is the fact that you have to have guys who are on reasonable contracts. You can have a bunch of guys who are making $5, $6, $7 million without those, you know, entry level deal players who are at least offsetting that somewhat. So, you know, the Jack Roslovics, the Mason Appletons, guys who are not taking a significant bite, but have shown that they can play at the NHL level, are going to be able to, you know, offset what you're paying for the Jacob Trubas, the Andrew Kopps, the Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine. So, and we've been talking about this now for a while, but I agree. Like, it's interesting what the Jets are going to have to do to be able to try and maintain some of these guys and retain some of them.
Right. It's possible, I guess, that Chevy's able to sign two of these three, like talking about Myers, Tanev, and Sherratt. But if I'm a betting man, based on the number, I think it's going to be one of the three here.
I would agree with you there. When we return, we're going to continue our evaluation of the Winnipeg Jets forwards. Last week, we left off without doing Brandon Tanev, Andrew Kopp, Jack Ross, Adam Lowry, and Mason Appleton. They're up next. We're going to say, did they meet our expectations? Did they exceed our expectations, or did they underperform our expectations? We want to hear from you as well. You can chime in via Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can do so via text message. Send your text to 129090. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're fortunate enough to play with good players and on a good team, and that makes things a lot easier for you. You know, for myself, playing with Adam and Andrew throughout the majority of the year, and Matthew made things a lot easier for me. You know, they're great players, and when you play on a great team, you're going to have success.
Winnipeg Jets forward Brandon Tanev. That was from an end-of-season interview. Tanev, of course, having a career year with the Winnipeg Jets. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue in the Cordon Village Mall. We heard from Brandon Tanev off the top there. He, as we said in the first segment, when we were discussing the priority to re-sign him, had a career year for the Winnipeg Jets, putting up 29 points, which was the most he's had in his NHL career. 14 goals, 15 assists, shattered all of his previous NHL totals. This is sort of an easy one to start as we go through our expectations. Did Brandon Tanev exceed your expectations? Did he match them, or did he underachieve for the Winnipeg Jets during the 2018-19 NHL season?
Yeah, I would say he met my expectations, and, you know, he set the career high in points, as you mentioned, but, you know, I think based on last year was his breakout year in the NHL, and I think when you look at the Jets in the playoffs, I mean, Brandon Tanev, I thought, was pretty good for a guy that had all the injury problems. I mean, we know what he was going through, and you know, going back to what we talked about last segment, I mean, Tanev is a guy that you'd love to bring back. It's just because of the other players that have to get signed, he's the guy that's going to get squeezed out. And the way he played this year, he deserves a big contract coming up, and he'll probably get it. I'm not sure how many years he's going to get, Drew, but, you know, I could see him getting 3 or 4 years from a team. And you look at the playoffs right now, you look at the teams that are left and all of the upsets that we've seen, right? The Carolina Hurricanes, the Columbus Blue Jackets. I mean, I feel like a guy like Tanev would fit in perfectly on a team that leans towards that style of hockey, right? He's a guy that can work the cycle. He plays the physical game. We talked about it last segment, the hits and all of that. But, you know, for me, he met expectations. I mean, I think it's easy to say, again, that he exceeded expectations. But, I mean, you expected to, you know, him to be around 10 or 15 goals. And he's a guy that has pretty good advanced stats. And he's a guy that can play the penalty kill. And he's very good even strength. Obviously, he doesn't play on the power play. But, you know, I thought he had a good year. And if it was up to me, and, you know, you didn't have to factor in the salary cap, I would absolutely bring him back.
Dave?
I would say he exceeded my expectations. I think that, you know, he gets the benefit, to Ezzy's point, of playing with two very good players in Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry. And that's a huge benefit to him, because you can see when you're looking at the stats that he really does get a big boost when playing with those two guys. And so, you know, that TLC line really did seem to gel, and he was a beneficiary of that. But, you know, he also does all the things that guys shouldn't, you know, be able to do, which is play with injuries that most players can't play with. I mean, the guy
block shots and bounce back. Like, I mean, as if he doesn't even affect them.
You can see, like, the fact is that he does things out there that a team needs, which is on that PK. I mean, you know, oftentimes, like, when Maurice would use, like, Wheeler and Scheifele, you're like, well, no, use a guy like Tanev, because he's a guy who's going to be able to take that shot and not, you know, be destroyed. Somehow he's a little bit impervious to that kind of thing. And obviously you saw what he was able to do. I mean, obviously 14 goals, 15 assists. It's pretty big for a guy who wasn't expected to provide that much offense. So to me, he exceeded what I expected of him.
Moving on to Andrew Kopp. Andrew Kopp had 11 goals and 14 assists for 25 points. And for the record, for the audience listening, we are taking into account more than just their goals and assists. We are taking into account their entire body of work, including their advanced statistics. Time is a factor, so I'm only giving you their straight goals and assists. So Andrew Kopp had 25 points this year, which was a little less than last year's 28 points, although he did play 13 games fewer this season. So Andrew Kopp, meet, exceed, or underachieve this year?
For me, meet. And, you know, another player who is versatile like Brandon Tanev, another guy who plays a little bit on the penalty kill, a guy who can play center, he can play wing, he can play in all situations. I mean, this is a Swiss Army knife type of player, and this is a guy who is going to be retained by the Jets. I mean, he'll get a nice little salary bump, and he had a good year. But, you know, I think maybe this year, more so than previous years, I think you saw an underrated offensive game. I mean, what I mean is I think he maybe overperformed how you thought he was going to be offensively. So I really like Kopp's game, and when you're talking about, you know, whether or not, you know, he exceeded or managed, or pardon me, he met expectations. I mean, I personally think that, you know, this is a guy who really embodies what the Jets want to do. I mean, he's such a valuable player, such a smart player. That's what really stands out. I realize that's a hockey cliche, guys, but I mean, that's why Maurice depends on him so much. He can put him on the second line, the third line or fourth line. I mean, he's really settled more so into a third line role, but, I mean, the way he played, I mean, he's a consistent player. Consistent physical player. He's got a good offensive game. And, you know, so for me, he met expectations. I can't say that he exceeded expectations. I didn't think, you know, he was necessarily going to score 20 goals or 40 points or anything like that, but just a very reliable player. And, you know, I think kind of for me, Kopp kind of is part of that heart and soul of the Jets.
You know what? I would say he met my expectations as well as, but I think that Andrew Kopp, you know, I'm a big fan of what Andrew Kopp brings to this team. I think he's got an extraordinarily high hockey IQ. I think the fact of the matter is that he shows that versatility, and he, you know, he talked about it this season, throughout the season, that he likes that opportunity to play center, and he likes what that, you know, he thrives on that responsibility. And I think, you know, the Jets have a luxury in that Andrew Kopp is probably a player who can step up and take a bit more of a role than he's been given right now. And, you know, he can play obviously on the wing with Adam Lowry, and they have a lot of, really good chemistry between the two of them. But at the same time, to me, he's that player who, like you said, as a Swiss Army knife, and is happy to be that jack of all trades and play if he needs to in the center or play in on the wing. And I just think he brings so much to this organization. Just from a, you know, he really is a, you know, if you talk to him, he really just thinks the game out, and you know, he's just got a high level of passion for hockey. So to me, Andrew Kopp's a player who, yeah, I would agree. He's met my expectations for what I thought of him, but I definitely see him as a player who's going to have a bigger role in this team going forward.
And you mentioned center versus wing. I actually prefer him at center. I mean, yeah. I think he can do a really good job on the wing too, but his faceoff percentage this year is 55. And we talk a lot about Adam Lowry, and he was, you know, close to 60%, mm-hmm. but Adam Lowry is actually really good in the faceoff circle. So just a very consistent player, a guy that you know what to expect. I mean, he rarely has a bad game.
Jack Roslovic played his first full season in the NHL. He had 31 games last year. This year, he played 77 for the Jets, racking up 9 goals and 15 assists for 24 points in what some people might say was limited time on ice per game. Dave, your thoughts on Jack Roslovic's season. Did he exceed your expectations? Did he match them? Or did he underachieve?
You know what? I thought he actually met my expectations given the role he was, you know, or the role he was allowed to have with this team. I think that Paul Maurice doesn't have a tremendous amount of confidence, I should say, in his younger players. He has a tendency to default to his more veteran guys. And I think Jack Roslovic is a player who I watched in the AHL be one of the most dominant players in the American Hockey League. And, you know, look, the NHL is a completely different animal. You can't dominate the AHL and then jump up to the NHL and think you're going to dominate that league. You know, there's obviously an adjustment period. And, you know, I thought the 9 goals, 15 assists was good for what, you know, he's able to do. He's not a tremendous goal scorer. That's not his forte. He's more of a passer, more of a facilitator. So I'm not terribly surprised by that. But at the same time, again, he, you know, in his first full season, I thought he played admirably well given the role he was allowed to have on this team.
I'm going to say underperformed, and I agree with everything Dave said. I think for me, it's incomplete. I mean, it really is incomplete. First of all, how many line mates did Roslovic have this year, right? And I agree with you, Dave. I mean, Roslovic is not a pure goal scorer like Kyle Connor, and I think those two get linked together because mm-hmm. they were both taken in the first round, and, you know, they came up with the Moose and all that. But, I mean, I don't think Roslovic is necessarily going to be a 35 goal scorer at the NHL level like Connor. He's more of a distributor. And mm-hmm. for me, I just didn't like how Maurice used him.
Right.
I didn't. I'm not the only one. I know that. And, you know, I just think that Jack Roslovic is way too talented to be playing 7, 8, 9 minutes. I mean, we talked about it, guys, throughout the year. I mean, he wasn't, I don't think, put in a position to succeed. And, you know, he's got great hands. I mean, does he have to learn how to play away from the puck a little bit more? Yeah, I think so. But I mean, it's evident sometimes, you know, what he can do with that puck. I mean, he's got great puck skills. you know, not the most physical player. Sometimes you like to see him maybe go to the dirty areas, get some more shots from the spot.
He might grow into that, though, a little bit.
Well, yeah, he's still very young. Yeah. I mean, I think he has a bright future in the NHL. So, you know, I'm saying underperformed, and, you know, I'm giving him a minus one just simply because not necessarily anything he did wrong. I just don't think he played enough, and I don't think he played with the right players. And you look at Roslovic, and sometimes he can drive a line. And I think at times this year, you saw little spurts of what he can do, but you just didn't see enough of it.
Adam,
so I expected more. So that's why I have to go minus one. We're being honest here. And, you know, I had higher expectations for what he was going to do this year. And it's not just the offensive totals. I know you mentioned that, you know, we factor in the goals and assists. I mean, everybody wants to know. Everybody looks at the goals and assists and all the advanced stats and all that. But it's the way he, I think, developed. I think he flatlined a little bit this year. I don't think he took the next step. Look at Kyle Connor's trajectory, guys. I mean, last year was his breakout year. Mm-hmm. I think this year he stepped up his game at an overall level, not just the offensive game. I mean, I've said this before. I thought Connor was actually the Jets' best forward this year. I realized that,
on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fair point. Adam Lowry is our final Jets forward. He had 23 points this year, 12 goals, 11 assists in 78 games for the Jets. Did he match your expectations? Did he overachieve or did he underachieve, Dave?
Adam Lowry met my expectations. I mean, Adam Lowry, look, he had a down year from an offensive perspective. I mean, he had 21 points in 45 games the season prior. So, I mean, he obviously was on pace for a career year until he got hurt. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, he is the guy who Paul Maurice relies upon probably almost more than anyone. Him and Mark Scheifele is his top centers, I would suggest. And, you know, again, like I thought he from an offensive perspective, he didn't necessarily perform as well as you would have expected. But I guess Adam Lowry isn't simply just a guy who you're going to limit to how many goals and assists did he get. It's a totality of his game. I mean, obviously we're using that as a factor for everyone. Mm-hmm. But I just think from Adam Lowry's perspective, if you look at the advanced stats, his numbers were solid. Again, what he and Andrew Copp were able to do together was pretty significant. And I just think, like, he's just a very smart player. It's funny. It's just, it really just becomes a function of what the role the coach is giving these players and the opportunity that the coach.
It's amazing how much impact that has.
Yeah, of course. And it seems like an obvious statement, but I just think it's a function of, you know, it's the truth. I mean, if you had Adam Lowry playing in that role he was absolutely suited for, then I think, you know, he would probably exceed expectations. But I think he's probably, like, met them, maybe slightly underperformed from an offensive perspective. But overall, I think he probably met my expectations.
Lowry is a shutdown center.
Right.
I mean, that's the role that he's best suited for. And, you know, he does a good job at it. He's a physical guy. I mean, I talked about Andrew Copp in the faceoff circle. I mean, Adam Lowry has become elite in the faceoff circle. You look at his faceoff numbers, this was by far his best year. Mm-hmm. And he's become so reliable for Paul Maurice in the faceoff circle. And I agree with Dave. I mean, if Adam Lowry played on the second line, I mean, or the first line, you know, or he played on the power play, he doesn't get a lot of power play time. Mm-hmm. I mean, he doesn't get a lot of penalty kill time either. So, I mean, his game is really suited for 5-on-5, and, you know, he's that all-around player, and he can chip in. You know, you mentioned, you know, his career high is 15 goals, and he only had one goal in the playoffs. He still scored 12 goals. I mean, that's kind of, you know, what you're expecting him to be. I mean, is there a huge difference if we're talking about him scoring 15 goals versus 12 goals?
Yes.
I don't think, no, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Dave?
Of course.
The bread and butter of his game is the physical side of his game and the intangibles, a very reliable player, a very good defensive player. And quite frankly, I think if the Jets had more elite defensive players like him, I think they'd be much better team.
No question.
When we come back, Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us for more Winnipeg Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Want you to get in on the conversation. You can do so via Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website has got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're pleased to welcome back to the program from the Winnipeg Free Press our good friend Jason Bell. Jason, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Morning, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Jason. I want to ask you the same question that I started off the show asking the boys about, you know, the Jets' sort of key three unrestricted free agents, Brandon Tanev, Ben Chiarot, and Tyler Myers. From your perspective, Jason, which of those three should be priority number one for Kevin Cheveldayoff to resign during this offseason?
Yeah, I'm in sort of the camp that seems to be pervading thought that Ben Chiarot probably needs to be retained. I mean, you look at this defensive core right now, and you know, he was probably not a guy that a lot of us believe was a top four guy. I mean, he hasn't really slotted in that way since he's been here. He's had some flashes of stretches of real good hockey, particularly when the Jets, if you remember two or three seasons ago, really were racked by injuries, and he kind of stepped up and you know, he's made his way through the organization and has played very well, and he's afforded himself nicely in that top four. And I'm not saying in a perfect world he is a top four, but he sure worked well with on the left side with Dustin Byfuglien. So, you know, he is going to be he's going to be looking for a raise, there's no question, and he certainly deserves one. But I do think that Ben Chiarot is a guy that they probably are going to have a tough time replacing those minutes, that physical play. He's a real character guy. He's got some size, obviously, but he is going to be, he's definitely going to be up for a raise right now. So,
you know, Jay, a lot of the focus obviously has been on Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor, you know, Jacob Trouba, the big RFAs, and then Drew asked you, you know, about the UFAs. Everybody knows who the big UFAs are, Myers, Tanev, and Chiarot. But, you know, you look at some of those other contracts that might not be as favorable when you're trying to find, you know, $15, $16 million a year to sign Patrick Laine, to sign Kyle Connor. And, you know, the two guys that stand out to me, and I'm sure, you know, you've thought about this as well, but Matty Perreault and Dmitry Kulikov, you know, they're each making $4 million a year. Kulikov Bob's got 1 year left, and then Matty Perreault's got 2 years left. How do you think Chevy navigates those two contracts?
Well, you know, you make a good point there, those are two names that I circled in my little notes before I, you know, came on with you guys. And, you know, the problem is, and you've identified, is that there's just no middle class anymore in the National Hockey League. It's just not the way it works anymore. I mean, we look at the kind of contract that Adam Lowry signed. And Adam Lowry, and I have to get the exact number here, but I mean, he's sort of what you would consider at that 2.9 range. That's middle class money right now. I mean, then you go to this 5, 6, 7, 8 range, and the Jets have a few of them, and they've got some more that are going to be paid that kind of money or higher than that. Then they've got a whole bunch of guys at ELCs or at that million mark. And, geez, wow, it just becomes very, very difficult when you've got guys like Matty Perreault, who, you know, he's a character guy, and they certainly like him. But, I mean, 15 goals in 82 games. And then Dmitry Kulikov, I mean, wow, there's a guy again that's making, you know, north of four and for two more years at 4.3. And, you know, the suggestion was made. I mean, the Jets have only really exercised that buyout option, I think, one time with Mark Stewart. And, if a guy like Kulikov becomes a bit untradeable, then is the buyout an option? And do you look at maybe a Matthew Perreault as somebody that you're in a situation where you have to move? I mean, you've got guys like Christian Vesalainen and Mason Appleton wanting to come into this roster, and you want to be able to create some space. And you guys have talked about Jack Roslovic. I mean, this is a guy that I know that him and his camp and his family, they weren't particularly thrilled with the kind of usage that he got. And, you know, at some point, you're going to have to start giving some of these younger forwards an opportunity to perform and excel in a top six, a top nine role. And it makes it difficult when Matthew Perreault is still filling that slot. So you're right. You've identified two guys that the contracts are problematic. And I would throw in, you know, and this is not a popular, probably, opinion from some people out there who would jump out of their seats every time Nikolai Ehlers picks up the puck and moves through the, you know, moves east-west a lot of the time. And, but, you know, there's another contract that at the $6 million mark for another 4, 5, or 6 years. You know, I wasn't particularly thrilled with his production this year. And, I mean, if there was a guy you were asking yourselves who was an underachiever, Nick Ehlers with 21 goals in 62 games and a disappearing act for the most part in crunch time down the stretch and in the playoffs. So, you know, those are two guys and maybe a third guy in Ehlers that they have to consider. I mean, you know, we know that a big-name player is probably going to be moved off this team. It just has to be. And you wonder if it's one of those three guys or more than one of those three guys.
Jay, when Jacob Trouba was asked about Matt Hendrick's return back on March 1st, he said, kind of like when your dad's away on a road trip and he comes home and everyone is happy to see him. He's been great. It's tough not to smile when he walks in a room, and when he starts talking, everybody just somehow seems to get happier. And at the time, it was just seen as a, you know, a positive comment for a returning veteran player who was obviously well-liked in the team. Fast forward to the end of the season, talk about dissension in the room, and maybe that comment means a little bit more than it did, you know, at the time. But you had a chance to catch up with Matt Hendricks and talk to him about the feelings in the room. And what was the sense that you got after having a conversation with him?
Well, I enjoyed talking with Matt Hendricks. He's been good to me. He's been good to the media. He's, you know, he's obviously very accessible and pretty straightforward. And, you know, he's just got great leadership skills and says the right things. And I think in my conversation, he did just that. I mean, I think there was, he certainly protected the sanctity of the room. And you know, he suggested to me that when he returned, he did not see a difference in the room than when he had left the year before, when everything was hunky-dory and they were rolling through two playoff series and of course almost get past, or they get past Nashville, and then, you know, they win that first one against Vegas and then get thumped. But I think we would all agree that there was certainly a different feel in that room, even when we weren't in there. It just, you know, there were hints of them. I mean, you know, again, the long meeting, players meeting after. I mean, Paul Maurice says as much, that there was feathers being that had to be ruffled in it. Smoothed out. He said that in his outgoing interview with us. And so was Matt Hendricks completely upfront with me? No, but I mean, he took the high road, and he talked about all the positives that were in that room when he came returned, and the great leadership group. He mentioned Blake Wheeler specifically, and the good work that Dustin Buffalo and Mark Scheifele do in that room, and how there is this great young core of leaders emerging, and that he looked at a situation at the end of his career and at the trade deadline and gave the thumbs up to return to a club that he thought he would probably have no chance of dressing for, but would have a chance to potentially hoist a Stanley Cup, and that's why he came over. So, you know, he said all the right things to me, and I have no reason to not necessarily believe most of what he said, but I just think that, you know, he was guarded in the fact that he was protecting, you know, what may or may not have gone on in that room. But it's hard not to respect that opinion, and it's hard not to respect the kind of role he played with the Jets. And, you know, they obviously brought him in because there's a tremendous amount of admiration for him. But I mean, I think we've certainly seen the last of Matt Hendricks in a Winnipeg Jet jersey, and because I think that, you know, he's certainly at the bat well into the 17th or 18th hole of the back nine of his career, but he's just got all the makings of what you would think would be the kind of guy that an NHL team, whether it's in Minnesota, you know, close to home, or somewhere else, that would be that's got coaching material written all over him.
Jason Bell is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jason covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason, you know, what's priority number one this offseason for Paul Maurice and his coaching staff in your mind?
You know, I think that the Patrick Laine thing is going to get done. I think it's going to be a bridge deal. I don't know the money at this point. You know, I just have a real hard time believing that you totally lock up a guy like Patrick Laine for the long haul right now after a 30-goal season, which sounds terrific on paper, and it was. But it sure wasn't if you take out the month of November. And, I mean, let's be honest, there was, you know, I think if memory serves, he scored in 19 or 20 of those games, and there was 62 or 63 of them where he didn't score a goal. That's a long time with some inactivity from a guy who's supposed to be a bona fide sniper. But I think he's going to get done.
Looks like Jason might be cutting in and out on us on the cell phone, so we're going to try and
Jay, you still there?
No, I think we dropped Jason Bell. So Jason Bell, the Winnipeg Free Press, was joining us here on the program. We're trying to get that answer out of him about Paul Maurice's priority. You know, I appreciate what he said about Matt Hendricks there, though. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, because Matt Hendricks, I mean, you have to ask the questions and you sort of expect that answer from Matt Hendricks, but we know that there's sort of a wink and a nudge going on, and that he might not be 100% truthful, because Matt Hendricks in that position probably can't be truthful as well.
Yeah, and I mean, Matt Hendricks is a good soldier, so that was what you would expect from him. But, you know, like you said, Drew, Jay had to ask the question, and it's an interesting conversation, obviously, because yeah, it's one that's been a big focus here at the end of April.
Right, and you know, when you're talking about, you know, it doesn't matter what player you're talking about on what team in what league. I don't think most players really want to talk about what's going on in the dressing room. I mean, you know, we've all been in dressing rooms. It's obviously, you know, at a different level. I mean,
oh, we don't talk
River Heights Community Center hockey is a little bit different level than the NHL. But when you're talking about, you know, you know, Matt Hendricks or Mark Scheifele or Blake Wheeler. I mean, any issues that, that the Jets may have had in the dressing room, I mean, no, put it this way, none of these guys want to be the guy that's known that, that they said something that leaked out to the media,
they
right?
They won't be so, back in another dressing
room. I think we have Jay back, though.
Jason, are you there?
Hey.
Oh, there you go. Jason Bell, the Winnipeg Free Press back.
His landline, I guess. Sorry, guys.
That's all good, Jason. We were asking you.
And Jay had enough of us.
Yeah, exactly. Question was sort of priority number one for Jets head coach Paul Maurice this offseason.
Paul Maurice or the organization?
Paul Maurice, sorry.
Number one priority for Paul Maurice.
Like, what does he need to rectify in terms of, you know, as the head coach, what does he come into training camp looking to achieve?
As much himself, guys, is that this club was not as solid defensively, team-wise, from top to bottom as it had been in the past. And, you know, you wonder what slipped over the course of a year, because the year before they were so good cutting their goals against, and in a sense they were chasing in their own end, and thus the penalty minutes came down too at the stick and fractions. We saw that those numbers elevated as well, and I think that's, you know, that has to be priority number one for this team, because this team can score goals, we know that, and I think that for the most part they're going to be retaining the guys that create offense. So the priority again is to get back to the drawing board and to ensure that there's buy-in from this entire organization to, you know, top to bottom, whoever is the final roster. And we are going to see some changes obviously summer, but there has to be buy-in for that defensive soundness.
Jay, last question for you here, and I like it. We're getting a little extended Jay Bell time, but, you know, you tweeted about this a couple of days ago. I wanted to ask you about the 2019 Manitoba Hockey Hall of Fame class, and, you know, kind of an interesting connection. You know, if you haven't seen Jay's tweet about Trevor Kidd and Marty Murray, they were actually traded for one another, and then that was obviously done by Kelly McCrimmon, who, of course, is the owner of the Brandon Wheat Kings, now the general manager of the Vegas Knights, but... You know, just a comment on some of the players and the builders that are going in. You have Barry Shankro in there as well. Obviously, a shout out to the Flin Flon Warriors. You know, my dad, John Ginsburg, being from Flin Flon, Manitoba. But just a thought on the 2019 Hall of Fame class.
Well, it's just a cool opportunity to meet and talk to these people. There's no question. And I don't just mean the big names like Trevor Kidd, and we all know Kidder through your organization there at 1290. But, you know, I was very fortunate to be in Brandon. And when that trade was made, I was a sports reporter in Brandon. And, of course, Trevor Kidd was the star of the show on a very, very bad Brandon Wheat Kings hockey team in 1991. And Kelly was looking to make a big move, and he made a huge splash in getting the rights to a young Marty Murray, who was small and flashy and came from tiny Lyleton, Manitoba, a speck on the map, and from a farming community with a great family. And, of course, that getting Marty Murray completely turned that franchise around. And, of course, Trevor Kidd goes on to win a Memorial Cup in Spokane. So it's so very, very interesting that the three gentlemen, the guy who orchestrated the trade and the two centerpieces of that trade, would go into the Manitoba Hockey Hall of Fame at the same time. And it was great to talk to Trevor. It was great to talk to Marty over the phone and to meet Marty's family. But, you know, so many other great players in there. And, you know, Susanna Ewan, a woman from Winnipeg who won a gold medal for Canada at the 1990 Women's Worlds. I mean, you know, this is a spark plug young lady at the time who scores a whole pile of goals for Canada during that tournament when women's hockey was just getting going. And she was so great to talk to. And some of the older fellas that did so many great things, Bob Fitchner, who played, had a cup of coffee and was in the NHL in his last year of pro. And you're just so excited to talk about his days in Quebec. So it was just a great day to see those fine folks go into the Manitoba Hockey Hall of Fame.
And we echo the congratulations going out to all those well-deserved inductees. Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press covers the Winnipeg Jets. He also covers hockey here in Manitoba. Jason, thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, sorry for the technical problems, guys. Yeah, I hope you have a great weekend.
Well,
you
Jason, too, we're definitely going to hold it against you.
Yeah, we'll have to go landline next time. I'm one of the dinosaurs that still has one of those.
Oh, there you go. We'll use it next time. Thanks, Jay.
Bye-bye.
When we come back, we continue our evaluation of the Winnipeg Jets players. We look at the defense. That's up next. Who matched our expectations? Who exceeded? Who underachieved? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You know, I've been here long enough and to feel that way, and you know, I'm proud to be a Winnipeg Jet. It's all I've ever wanted to be since the team moved here. You know, I've come up through the system. I'm, you know, a homegrown guy, and you know, so obviously this is an important place to me and somewhere I enjoy playing. So hopefully things work out that way this summer.
Winnipeg Jets defenseman Ben Chiarot addressing his time in Winnipeg as he's about to become an unrestricted free agent. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290, the segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and his team at the Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Drew, just quickly, I know you want to get back to the report cards here.
Yeah.
I got to mention something. Last segment, we were talking to Jay Bell about Marty Murray and Trevor Kidd, and Marty Murray specifically, the last 2 years, just went back and looked at his stats. I knew that he had crazy stats for the Wheaties, but his last 2 years with the Wheat Kings, he had 83 goals and 142 points in four seasons with the Wheat Kings. He had 292 points.
It's pretty good.
Absolutely crazy. Yeah. I mean, he is still one of the best all-time Wheat Kings.
Yes, indeed. What didn't really translate to the NHL, but he certainly was, you know, you wonder if he'd played in a different era.
He played a little bit in the NHL.
I know he played a little bit, yeah. But you wonder if he played in this era where, you know, there's less of a premium on size and there's more of a premium on talent and skill, if that would have changed things. But obviously, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda. We don't know the answer to that. Let's get back to our report cards, our end of season evaluations for the Winnipeg Jets defensemen. We start with Jacob Trouba. He led all Jets defensemen with 50 points this season, certainly a career high for him. 8 goals, 42 assists, 50 points for the Winnipeg Jets. Jacob Trouba, exceed expectations, meeting expectations, or underperforming expectations? Dave Minuk.
Well, I mean, he exceeded my expectations. I didn't anticipate Jacob Trouba was going to have that kind of breakout offensive season like he did. Especially, you know, I mean, the one thing Jacob Trouba talked about at the end of last season was, you know, adding, you know, responsibility and being given that first pairing responsibility. And, you know, we know how much he loves playing with Josh Morrissey. He talked about that at the end of the season after that Vegas Golden Knights series ended. And clearly that was important to him. And, you know, we just saw the versatility. I mean, now, do we want Jacob Trouba on that that first pairing, you know, power play or first power play unit? Probably not. I don't think he's as quick as you probably need a player to be back there in terms of the way he's a little too methodical sometimes, and I think that works against him. But I think from a perspective of, you know, can he be a horse for this organization? Absolutely. And again,
or any organization.
Well, no,
the case may
you know, and again, a lot of people, I talked about it a little bit last week. I think sometimes people read into his tone, but from Jacob Trouba, I've covered him, you know, since he joined the Jets organization, you know, as a young player out of University of Michigan. I think he's just, that's just his demeanor. I don't think he's one who's going to be rah-rah. I think especially after the way the season ended this year versus last year where you're coming off, you know, the Western Conference final defeat versus a first round defeat, I think you're a lot less enthusiastic. But I mean, Jacob Trouba is not a pom-pom waving, I'm going to reveal anything. He holds his cards tight to his chest. So, you know, I mean, again, whether he's with the Jets long-term or not, I'm not sure. But I think, you know, what he provides this organization from a stability perspective is something you just can't turn your nose up at.
Yeah, Dave, I'm with you. I'm going to give him a plus one, you know, exceeded expectations. And, you know, we know that he's the top pairing defenseman for this team with Morrissey. But for me, what was the most impressive is when Josh Morrissey missed, you know, what was it, 20 to 25 games with that injury in the second half of the season, Nathan Beaulieu, who was acquired prior to the trade deadline. I mean, that pairing was really good for Paul Maurice. And the constant there is obviously Trouba. Bully is a good defenseman, former first round pick, but I mean, when you talk about, you know, the career totals, the offensive totals, the 50 points and all of that, obviously part of that has to do with the fact he was getting top power play time with Buff out of the lineup, right? So he was getting more power play minutes. He was using that big shot from the point. And I think there were a lot of Jets fans that, you know, didn't really like Trouba on the top power play unit. And at times the whole power play got stale. And I get that. I mean, Trouba isn't as talented as Buff on the power play, not just the shot, but the ability to, I think, you know, jump up into the rush and maybe move around a little bit. Yeah. You know, Dave talks about sometimes he gets a little, you know, stagnant, not just defensively, but, you know, on the power play as well. But, I mean, when you're talking about this year, I mean, we didn't talk about it a lot, but, you know, it's got to be tough for Trouba. Say whatever you want about Trouba, but, you know, his future is uncertain, and, you know, his options are pretty limited here. I mean, the Jets still control his destiny. He's only got one more year before he can control his destiny, but, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty when you're talking about, is he going to be traded? You know, is he going to get another one-year deal? I mean, is a long-term contract back on the table? We're not sure. We're not in Trouba's head. We're certainly not, you know, privy to, you know, what Kurt Overhart's plan is, but when you're talking about Trouba, I mean, you know, it's possible that this is his last year, guys. And when you're coming off of a career year, I mean, it's kind of bizarre when you think about it, right? If a guy's coming off of a career year, you think, okay, you know, this guy's going to be locked up to a 7 or 8 year contract. But we know that back in 2016, Trouba wanted out of here. I mean, that's a fact, right? So, but when we're basing, you know, our expectations on just what Trouba did on the ice, I mean, he had a fantastic year. I mean, you know, did he make a mistake in game 5 versus the Blues? Yes, but you can't, you know, pin, you know, that whole game or the outcome of that series just on what Trouba did in game 5 by pinning the puck up against the corner, you know, making a poor decision. But I mean, he had a great year. So I got to go, you know, with exceeding expectations, even if he isn't a Jet long term. I mean, he's a great, great defenseman.
We will come back to do the defenseman again after this following interview, but Thursday was a seismic day as it pertains to women's professional hockey in North America. Haley Salvian of TheAthletic.com joins us next to talk about the statement released by the women's a number of women's professional hockey players and where it goes next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number 2 here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com, we're pleased to welcome to the program Haley Salvian. Haley, good morning and thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back.
Our pleasure, Haley. Obviously brought you on to talk about the seismic announcement on Thursday, signed by over 200 professional women's hockey players, including some of the most prominent players, that they will not play in a professional league in North America this coming season until really improvements are made, salary improvements, health care, health insurance, things of that nature. You know, as someone who covers the women's game, you know, how stunning was this announcement when it was released on Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, as someone who covers the game, this is it's a potentially transformative thing that's happening in women's hockey right now. You know, this is, it's pretty huge. 200 players from Canada, from the U.S., from Europe, you know, you're getting NCAA players, you know, Swedish professional hockey players, Team Canada and Team USA, who are supposed to be these bitter rivals, all kind of coming together and saying, you know what, enough is enough. We're going to start fighting for what we think we deserve in this game. And they believe, and I also believe, they deserve more than $2,000 a season to be playing professional hockey. The Americans deserve health insurance when they're playing a very dangerous sport. They just deserve a lot more than what's out there. And I think this is really huge. I think it is stunning. I mean, as someone who's been covering it for a while, I wasn't completely surprised about this news coming out. I did think once the CWHL folded, or even before that, I kind of felt that the Team USA players on the NWHL were planning something for a little while. I've heard these discussions have been happening for a very, very long time, but it's really, really huge that this is happening right now.
Haley, I think it's pretty clear that the best women professional women's players in the world, they want a better league, and you know, all the stakeholders involved want the NHL to get involved here. But as you know, and you've been on top of the story, and you've been doing an excellent job for The Athletic, because the NWHL still exists, the CWHL obviously folded, but the NHL has said repeatedly that because the NWHL exists, they can't get involved. So how tricky is this going to be here for the NHL? I guess the question I have for you here is, what's the next step for the NHL to get involved here?
Yeah, well, I mean, the NHL is, like you said, they've been really, really clear. There is still something in the market right now, and that's the NWHL. And I don't see them changing that stance. They don't want to be the bully. They don't want to be the guys that, you know, squash, you know, a powerful female businesswoman's business. And that's Danny Rylan. It's just a weird situation to me because, you know, it's very clear that there is a very strong contingent of players who say, we want an NHL-backed league. And then, you know, there's a lot of the people in the CWHL who are like, okay, perfect. Like, we're going to do what it takes to get you there. And then the NWHL and then a lot of their players also say, you know, we're going to make a run at this because we think our business can be successful for women. So it's tricky because you have Dani Ryland who believes that her business can be the thing that gives players what they want. And then you have some of the most powerful players saying, no, it's not you. We want something else. So it's kind of this pushing between these two powers, and the NHL is just kind of on the sidelines waiting for them to figure it out. So the players didn't specifically mention the NHL in their statement or the NWHL, but it's no secret, you know, what it is that these players want to happen.
You know, Haley, in the statement that was released, they said we will not play in any professional leagues in North America this season until we get the resources that professional hockey demands and deserves. Is there alternatives for these players in Europe, or is there some other plan, or would this be more of a situation where they choose to sit out the year to kind of show their resolve?
Yeah, I mean, there's the women's, like, Swedish professional hockey league, but, you know, I don't think they're going to play anywhere. I think it's going to be something where, like, Team USA or Hockey Canada, like, there'll be maybe some kind of contingency with their national teams, and they get to train and skate together with their national teams. And, you know, I'm not sure yet. You know, they did say North America, so they could, if they want, go over to Sweden, but I don't really know what the money's like out there and with the European Professional League. So if Kendall Coyne Schofield couldn't even move to Minnesota from Chicago, I don't know how viable it is for her to pick up and move to Sweden, you know. So I don't know if that's going to be something that happens. I think this is going to be just a year sit out.
Haley Salvian is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the announcement by many, many prominent women's hockey players that they will not play in North America next season without some seismic changes to the game. You know, Haley, what about the players? And, you know, it's reported about 200 players that signed the letter. What about the players who didn't sign the letter? You know, what are you hearing from those players, if anything, as to their decision, you know, to not get on board with the vast majority of players?
Yeah, I mean, the players who didn't sign, they just thought that there wasn't enough answers. So, you know, the players who did sign this are saying, we're going to fight for a better league, we're going to fight for better pay, we're going to fight for better benefits, we're going to fight for what we deserve. And then, you know, there's some players who are saying, okay, so what is that league? Who's going to run it? How much are we going to get paid? How many teams are there going to be? And how many spots for players is there going to be? Because some of these players are seeing there's no way that a brand new professional hockey league run by the NHL, if you get your way, is going to house all, you know, 3, 4, whatever, however many hundred of us. It's maybe going to house 100. So I think the players who are choosing not to be involved in this are kind of seeing, hey, if I sign this dotted line or if I, you know, tweet out this statement, this could be the end of my professional hockey career as it ever was. Because in reality, if there's, you know, a 5-team, 6-team even, you know, NHL-backed women's hockey league with 20 spots on the roster, that's not a lot of cap. That's not a lot of, you know, players who are going to be able to play in that, and that's going to be the cream of the cream of the crop. So the players who aren't signing that, I think, are recognizing that. And they're also just saying, you know, you guys who are leading this charge aren't giving me enough information to be able to put my career on the line and lose out on a year of playing professional hockey.
And Haley, this has got to be a really tough decision for a lot of these women, right? I mean, you're not talking about, you know, average players here. You're talking about the best, the cream of the mm-hmm. cream, when you're the la creme de la creme, I should say, when
yeah.
you're talking about Kendall Coyne and you're talking about Hillary Knight and you're talking about Sarah Nurse. And, you know, Drew mentioned it's 200 players here. You know, in covering this story, I mean, have you talked to any of these women about what their plans are going to be for this year if they, you know, do eventually sit out the entire year? Do you expect, you know, other leagues, including the NHL, to maybe offer some of these women employment?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think the players that are with the national team, they get compensation from their national team. So this might be something where they get to just, you know, spend the year training with Team Canada or USA Hockey. They haven't really mentioned, things are still kind of up in the air. I did reach out to USA Hockey to see if they had a contingency plan for their national team players. I don't believe that there is one yet. I think those conversations are still ongoing. But, you know, if a little league pops up, you know, they're still sitting out. So even if I think there was some talk, you know, Graham Roostin was saying he'll, like, buy back the CWHL and he'll create something for those players. Even if somebody does come in and create a league, you know, that's counterproductive. You know, then you're back to having two leagues, and then you still have 200 players who said they will not be playing professional women's hockey in North America this year. So I don't know if they'll be, you know, they'll offer them, hey, here's a job in marketing, or hey, Kendall, hey, Hillary, come back to NHL Network a few more times a season. I'm not sure if that's going to be something. This is still so fresh and new. And honestly, when I spoke with Hillary and Kendall, and I didn't even ask them, like, hey, are you going to get a job this year? Because I don't even think they've looked that far ahead. I think it's still setting in for them that they're not going to be playing hockey for an entire year.
Yeah, just as an aside, I was listening to Kendall during the Blues Stars game, and she was doing an amazing job. So as far as I'm concerned, you know,
she's got a career as an analyst.
Yeah,
and she doesn't want to play hockey anymore.
She's great.
She's great. I've been loving AJ Molesko being on the calls too. She's awesome.
You know, Haley, we saw the NFLPA release a statement in standing in support of women's hockey players about 22 hours ago, and I think about 15, 20 minutes ago, the NHLPA released a similar statement. What kind of external support are these women seeing from either, you know, like I saw Billie Jean King was instrumental in giving them advice, but, you know, what kind of external support are they receiving from outside the women's hockey game?
A lot. I mean, I think for this, you know, group of women, they're the ones who can change the game. And I think these are changes that have been a long time coming. You know, you look at what the CWHL was offering for 12 years and everybody just kept saying, okay, yeah, like we're just lucky to have somewhere to play and, you know, to be not making any money for 10 years and then for 2 years to be making about 2,000. That's just not okay for, you know, how good these players are. You know, they're called professional athletes, but they're nowhere close. So I think the support has been huge. You know, like you said, the NHLPA, the NFLPA, Billie Jean King was on some of their conference calls telling the girls, you know, giving them advice and supporting them through this. I should call them women, not girls. And, you know, there's also been, you know, some of their big sponsors, CCM and Bauer have made statements saying, you know, we stand with these women, like we stand with our athletes, like Sarah Nurse and Brianna Decker. They're getting a lot of support. I think everyone's on board with this. You know, you see Jaina Hefford, she's like saying how proud she is of these women for taking a stand. Same with Cassie Campbell. Ian Cole was asked about it. I believe his sister plays hockey. So there's a lot of support for what these women are doing, but there is also, you know, the NWHL and those players' side who are still just saying, like, why couldn't we have given it a shot here?
Haley, last question for you. Haley Salvian of TheAthletic.com is our guest. You know, what role do you foresee the Pegula family having in this? The Pegulas, of course, own the Buffalo Sabres. They own the Buffalo Buttes as well. They're the only team that's not owned by the league in the NWHL. How much of a role do you foresee, you know, the Pegula family and Pegula Sports and Entertainment ending up having in maybe rectifying the situation and making it so that there's a viable women's professional hockey league in North America?
So Katie Strang, who I've been working on with all of this and is a rock star, and she's like amazing. She's probably one of the best writers I've ever gotten the privilege to work with. Her and I actually just had a newer feature come out yesterday. You know, the future of that Buffalo Buttes franchise with the Pegula family involved is in doubt right now. We've gotten a couple of sources who've told us that the ownership of the Buttes from Pegula Sports and Entertainment is questionable. It's up in the air. It's in doubt, however you want to put it. The Pegulas haven't made a statement. They haven't said anything yet about the NWHL folding. I mean, the players sitting out for the year. Sorry, no one, they're not folding. Don't quote me on that. They haven't made a statement yet on the player sitting out because, you know, all they've said is we're in the midst of completing a review of the Buttes coming off our first season. You know, once we finished our review, we'll figure out where we're going to go moving forward. And our sources have told us that they're no longer going to be owning that Buffalo Buttes franchise.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's okay. I was just going to say, so their, you know, involvement in this, I'm not sure, because it depends on if they're going to be taking a step back from the NWHL or if they're going to be all hands on deck.
Well, it seems like there's still going to be some more twists and turns in this story. Haley Salvian will cover it for TheAthletic.com, and, of course, we'll bring you the latest here on Illegal Curve Hockey, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Haley, appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Take care, Haley. When we come back, we talk more about the Winnipeg Jets. We continue our evaluation of the defense. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to show what I can do. Obviously, I'd like to push to get as many starts as I can, and 20 games is more than I've ever played in a season, but I'd still like to push that envelope as much as I can, but I think it was nice to get some exposure and to show people what I can do and have my first healthy season that I've had in a long time.
Jets goaltender Lauren Brossoit, part of the end-of-season interviews. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Going to continue our look at the Jets' defense, which defensemen exceeded our expectations, which defensemen met our expectations, and which defensemen underperformed this past season. We talked about Jacob Trouba already. Interestingly, both Tyler Myers, Josh Morrissey, and Dustin Byfuglien, all three of them, finished with the same number of points, albeit in much different number of games. Tyler Myers had 31 points for the Winnipeg Jets in 80 games played. Did Tyler Myers meet, exceed, or underachieve this season, Dave Minuch?
I would say Tyler Myers underachieved. I didn't think he... I thought that, you know, unfortunately for the Jets, Tyler Myers has that offensive mindset sometimes a little bit too much. And I think that as a result, he was out of position a lot. And him and Dmitry Kulikov, like, they were fine. But the problem is it's the function of money. Right. If you have to look at what a guy is making, it's not just simply just how many points did he achieve. Mm-hmm. It's what is his cost to the team, right? So you're looking at what Tyler Myers costs from a financial perspective, and then you're looking at like what he's bringing to the team for that money. And to me, I just don't know that you're getting the value from Tyler Myers and his $5.5 million that it really requires. So to me, I would say he underperformed what my expectations were. And if you look at the numbers for Tyler Myers, both his points and just his kind of advanced stats, they weren't the best this season.
I'm going to say Myers met my expectations, Dave. And you know, when you're talking about Myers' future, obviously it's uncertain, similar to Jacob Trouba. But he scored 9 goals. I mean, 9 goals for a defenseman is pretty darn good. And when you're talking about Myers' overall game, I mean, it's pretty clear that Kulikov and Myers, even though they offer the Jets stability on that third pair, at times they did struggle, especially in their own zone. And I think that's more so a function of Kulikov, though, personally. I like Myers' game, and I'll say this much. I thought Myers really was stronger in the second half of the season. And I think the Jets as a whole were actually worse in the second half of the season. We all know that. I mean, the Jets were a .500 team in the second half of the season. But when you're talking about Myers, yes, sometimes does he jump up into the play and maybe put himself in an awkward position? Yes. But I think when you're talking about overall, he plays a pretty solid game. He's a smart defenseman. So I guess it depends who you ask. And I guess in this particular case, he didn't meet your expectations, Dave. But, I don't think the reason why Myers is going to come back, you mentioned it, it's going to be because he makes too much money. But, I've always liked his game, and he's been heavily criticized. I think sometimes, guys, when a defenseman coughs up the puck, or when you're talking about Trouba in Game 5 against the Blues, when he makes a play, a defenseman, I think
their mistakes are more glaring.
Yes, and I think the word I'm looking for, maybe it gets
magnified.
Magnified. That's the word I was looking for.
And Mad Libs, Illegal Curve here.
No, but but honestly though, and I think Myers sometimes became the whipping boy. I mean, for me, Kulikov had a much worse year than Myers.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. Josh Morrissey of the Winnipeg Jets set career highs in points with 31. He did it in only 59 games played. I think I know the answer to this. Josh Morrissey, match, exceed, or underachieve this season?
Well, I mean,
it's incomplete. I mean, he missed so much hockey, but I mean, he's exactly what we expected. What do you mean? He missed 25 games.
Well, I know, but I would say that he exceeded expectations in the games that he played, Dave.
You know what? I understand what Ezzy's saying. I mean, he played 59 games, but I mean, he had a career high in terms of points. He had his highest in terms of 31 points, and he obviously would have had a lot more had he been playing a full season. The issue I have is that I just have exceedingly high expectations for Josh.
Well, that's why I'm saying matching.
Fair enough.
That's the whole reason why we do this, right? Mm-hmm. It's the John Ginsburg scale, my dad, right?
That's right.
I mean, we used to give grades, but it's so subjective. A, B, B plus, C plus. I mean, you're going to give every guy a B. That's why we decided to go with, you know, the plus one. I mean, mm-hmm. Morrissey emerged as the Jets' best defenseman last year. I think we'd all agree with that,
mm-hmm.
right? So if he's the Jets' best defenseman and you expect him to be top pairing guy, the shutdown defenseman, I mean, he's got an underrated offensive game. I mean, we know that he's got really good advanced stats. Trouba and Morrissey are a bona fide top pair. So if your expectations are really high, as you mentioned, Dave, and I agree with you, I mean, he met those expectations. It's really unfortunate that he missed whatever it was, 22 games or whatever. And, you know, we didn't really get to see his best in the playoffs. But he was clearly, you know, fighting the lingering effects of that injury. I mean, it was clear to me that, you know, Morrissey was not 100% in the playoffs.
No, I absolutely agree. And again, like I said, I've been gushing about Josh Morrissey and his play since he was in the AHL. And I think, you know, he just continues to raise those levels of expectation. And I think for years to come, and, you know, there was a lot of talk this year at the exit meetings about leadership. And to me, Josh Morrissey is a natural leader of this team. And whether he'll be wearing an A sooner rather than later for this group, just because of A, how articulate he is as a speaker for the club, and also as a conduit to, you know, between the older players and the younger players. So to me, there's nothing but high expectations for Josh Morrissey. I've had them since he was a member of the Manitoba Moose, and they'll continue to increase as his role on this team increases.
Dustin Byfuglien was on pace for a career high in points until he got injured, of course. He had 31 points in 42 regular season games. He was going to be, you know, looked like he was going to be upwards of 50 or 60 points had he stayed healthy this season. Dustin Byfuglien meeting expectations, exceeding expectations, or underachieving expectations. Don't say incomplete.
No, I'm not. I'm not. And I mean, more so incomplete, because when you miss 20, 25 games, I mean, you have to factor that in, right? Mm-hmm. I think you really do. But Buff, for me, exceeded expectations. And you mentioned, I mean, he was on pace for a career year when it comes to points. But, you know, we're factoring in the playoffs, too. And I said this when we were breaking down the series. I thought Buff was one of the Jets' best players, if not the best player. I mean, we know, you know, he scored the goal off of Binnington's head and all that. But, you know, Buff was a force out there physically and offensively. And, you know, when you're talking about this year, I mean, you forget, you know, last year he had a bit of a down year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the year the Jets went to the Western Conference Final, I'm talking about this past year. So when you're talking about Buff, I mean, I thought that, you know, his injury and Morrissey's injury, I mean, it's tough to say, you know, who they missed more. But when you're talking about Byfuglien, I think you could argue that his absence affects the Jets more than Morrissey when you're talking about the power play and just overall the type of game that the Jets play. I mean, we know he's a guy that is so good on the zone exits and all of that, but also just his overall game. I mean, Buff, when he's at his best, he's all over the ice and he's having an impact, you know, at even strength and at special teams and all of that. So for me, you know, Buff was the Jets, you know, best offensive defenseman this year. I'm not talking about, you know, Trouba obviously had more points. If Buff was healthy the whole year, he probably would have had, you know, 60, 65 points. So, you know, this year I got to go plus one for Buff.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because he did miss 40 games. So you have to factor that in, obviously. But I mean, if you're looking at what he was able to achieve when he was playing the game, and I agree with Ezzy, he's impactful. He's probably the Jets' biggest impactful defenseman. Josh Morrissey's the steadiest defenseman. But in terms of having a big impact on the game, it's Dustin Byfuglien, and there's no question about it. And, you know, it's funny how we've been talking about him as, you know, some people talk about, you know, popularity. I mean, there's no question that he is the most popular Winnipeg Jets and player and has been since he laid that hit in the first exhibition game in that split squad game against the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah, fought on the first shift.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Didn't he fight Bogosian's brother, I think, was playing for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Zach Bogosian's brother was playing for them. Aaron, I think is his name. Aaron Bogosian.
It is Aaron. I don't think that's who he fought, though.
Maybe not. But anyways, the point is that he can sometimes be a lightning rod, but I agree with Ezzy. I thought he met and exceeded my expectations, because you're kind of expecting a little bit of a step back as he gets older. But again, when he was playing, I thought he was impactful for this team.
When we come back, John Mattis of thescore.com is going to join us. We'll look at the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll look around the NHL as a whole. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.